You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast.
Thank you, mi gente, for joining us once again with La Verdad Podcast. This is Christian here, and we have Carlos on the other side.
Hey, what's going on, familia? I'm really excited to be back. We took a quick break last week, but coming back stronger than ever.
You know, this is a special episode. I say that about every episode, but, you know, this one, I hope that resonates to a lot of people. We actually have on the line someone special to me, is his family as well, joining us directly from Arecibo, Puerto Rico, right?
Yes, Arecibo.
So we have our special guest today. It's Luis Alequin, who's my uncle, and he also, for those in Chicago, might know and kind of recognize the name. Thank you for joining us, Luis.
It's a pleasure to be in the show, and much success.
For sure, man. So for today's show, we kind of want to take it back a little bit into time. We've had a couple of different shows in regards to education. We had some shows that had to do with the Young Lords, with Chacha Jimenez, especially in the Chicago area. But now we want to talk a little bit about something big that was happening in Chicago. And a lot of people tend to forget or haven't looked into it, and that was the Chicago Salsa story. So you were a part of that, right?
Yeah. Actually, I became part of the Chicago Salsa scene in January of 1977. When I arrived from Puerto Rico, and it's almost like getting off the plane, I was already in a band. So,
and something unique, and the reason why we wanted to touch upon the Chicago Salsa story was because a lot of famous musicians, and not just famous musicians, but also a twist on the salsa genre came from Chicago, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit, but can you give us a little introduction of yourself on what do you do, what do you do now, and how'd you get started in the music scene?
Okay, well, right now, I still play music. I play in church. I'm a percussionist in church. I was playing drums, regular drums, for about 10 to 12 years, and now I'm back on Latin percussion. Okay. So I'm still trying to keep my chops together. Yeah. And it's like riding a bike anyway.
Yeah. I found that out the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. I read something that you were doing something the other day. Yeah.
Yep.
And, well, since, 1990, I've been here in Puerto Rico. So, played with some local people here and recorded with some local people, but okay. Now I just mainly play in a church band and with very good musicians, all from the conservatory. And but my background comes from growing up in Chicago. I come from a musical family, as you know. Grew up listening to my uncles, my dad's brothers. They had a band together, and then I would, as a little kid, would go down to the basement to hear them rehearse, and got interested in music at a very young age. And actually, one time they took me as a young kid to see them perform, and that's when I got, wow, I want to be on that stage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really grabbed me.
They were called Los Alequines, right?
Los Alequines, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was in the 60s.
Okay.
In the 60s, and you know, for being local guys, they used to headline for you know, Ismael Rivera, wow. El Gran Combo, any band that would come from Puerto Rico or New York, you know, they would be there too. So yeah. They weren't, you know, they were mainly like a sextet, but okay. they were headlining, and you know, they were very experienced. They had their good harmonies together, and they had good arrangements, and that's why they were hired to headline a lot of the shows.
Okay.
And that's where I got my interest in music, mainly from my uncles and from my father. My father played guitar.
Yeah.
And as a little kid, I remember him playing, you know, his guitar almost every late afternoon. So, you know, I grew up in a music atmosphere, musical yeah. atmosphere.
And Los Alequines was more was it a Latin band or was it more like rock or all types of different music?
No, they played the beginning of Los Alequines had actually a drum set.
Okay.
They had drum set, guitar, bass, and congas.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, yeah. Then later on, they kept the drum set and they added timbales and they would play. They would play salsa. They would play boleros. They would play merengues. Yeah, they played everything. Nice, everything. Nice. Yeah.
So you started out in percussion. And for those of you that don't know the musical lingo, percussion has to do with like the congas, the timbales, the bongoses, and those are the essential part of Latin music. So when you hear, you know, percussion is actually honestly is a wide range of different types of percussion instruments, and you were mostly involved in the timbales, congas, and bongos, right?
Right.
Yeah. So then after playing with Los Alequines, did you go back to Puerto Rico or?
Well, actually, this is what happened. Los Alequines stopped playing. I guess, you know, most of the guys got married and they went their different ways. And my cousin, the timbalero, had the timbales. He still had the timbales. And I talked to my dad and we talked to him and we bought the timbales off of him. And the timbale case had the name Los Alequines. So I bought those, and then that's when, in the, you know, like 69, 70, 71, that era, you know, Carlos Santana was, you know, emerging, and I was, you know, I was taken by that beat, so I started jamming to Santana records, and that's how I first got started playing the timbales, making noise. But then around 1971, early 71, we moved to Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And when we moved to Puerto Rico, another cousin of ours, an original Alequines, one of the original, the drummer, living in Quebradillas, Puerto Rico, I came to live with my grandma and his grandma too, and he was in an orchestra.
Mm.
And well, one day he knew I had the timbales. He says, "I know you play timbales a little bit, you know. As a matter of fact, one of our musicians is leaving the band. There's an opening, but it's not for timbales." And I said, "I don't care." I told him, "I don't care what it is. If it's percussion, I'll do it. I'll learn on the spot." He says, "It's for congas." I go, "Don't worry. I'll learn." So actually, the congas belonged to the band, so I didn't have to get any congas. That was a blessing. And later, I bought them off the band little by little. I, you know, from each gig, I would give them some money, and they were my first congas. Yeah. And actually, my cousin Jesse, which was a timbalero, he showed me like the rudiments, you know, a little bit of the first basic beats of the conga. Mm-hmm. And then from then on, we started gigging right away, so I had no chance of getting, you know, proper teaching. So I learned along the way.
So during this time, how old were you during this time?
I was about 13 or 14 years old.
13 or 14 and playing with a big band, huh?
Playing with a orchestra, yeah, of guys that were, you know, in their 20s.
Yeah, and what was the name of this band?
That band was called La Oportunidad. Then they changed it to, it was called La Oportunidad. I remember that.
So,
and then it changed to the core of the band was they were three brothers. They were called Los Hermanos Jimenez.
Okay.
So yes, okay. The band was called Los Hermanos Jimenez. Y el Combo Sentimental, that was first name. Then they changed to La Oportunidad when they got, you know, additional singers. And that's what I remember.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, and like I said, I was hired like on a Wednesday, and a Friday we had to go play already in San Juan.
Oh, wow.
So I got in one rehearsal in, and then and you're playing in San Juan area. Well, I got to meet other congueros of that era. So I was like a novelty. I was a young kid, and they would they would give me pointers. Hey, do it this way and practice this way. They even showed me how to mount my own skins on the congas and everything. Oh, so wow. I learned from the old school, the old pros.
and during this time, so this is like what, the 1970s around?
71, 71 on, yeah.
Who else was in the scene at this time? Like, was this already Hector Lavoe making it kind of big? Yeah, so that style of salsa was kind of, because, you know, if we look at history, you know, salsa went from being this ballroom type of music, right? So they would only play it for elite people, and you know, this is when Tito Puente was real big. He would go in with the suits, the tuxedos,
and then
it started to developing into more of an urban type music. So would you say during this time it was more of like the urban, like the young people's music?
Right. I remember in the early 70s and here in Puerto Rico, before I went back to Chicago, we would play plazas, you know, that's where they had the fiestas patronales.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all like when you go now to a reggaeton concert, it was all like that in the 70s. It was all young people, you know, doing their dance moves. And if the band was hot, man, they would clap and they wouldn't let you go. And they would ask for another. And it was a special time. And it was like a rough salsa. It was like urban, you know, with the lyrics.
Yeah.
Pertaining to like the street and the city, and you know, not too much politics, but mainly about the street and your girlfriend and all this.
Yeah, which is what made that size. I forgot the name that they put to it, because I know you know, Hector Lavoe and Willy Colon had kind of branded that type of salsa, because before them, you know, you had Richie Ray, Bobby Crew. They still had a little bit of that ballroom, but when Fania started to take over, it was more of that dirty, more of that down to earth salsa. And I was listening to some arrangements. I know before this, before we had this interview, Carlos and I started listening to some arrangements, and you could tell the difference. But like I said, we'll get into that a little bit more, because I have questions in regards to that style. So after being in Puerto Rico, how many years were you over there?
Well, I went through high school playing in the bands.
Okay.
So when I graduated from high school, I did like a semester here at the university. Then I decided I wanted to go back to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I left. After I graduated in 1976 from high school, and in January of 77, I was already in Chicago. So. Okay.
Yeah. So 1977, you were in Chicago, and
January, January, from sunny Puerto Rico
to the coldness of Chicago, huh?
Yeah, 1977 in the cold. Yeah.
so when you came to Chicago, was that? I remember reading an article, and we'll post this on there. Carlos will post it on our description. This is from an NPR article that talked about Carlos Ruiz Caribe, and we'll go more into detail on that. And it talked about the salsa music here in Chicago. And
right.
A lot of like young people. So there were probably, you know, there was young people. You were, what, 18, 19 at the time?
Right. Yeah, just out of high school, basically.
Yeah. So when you got here to Chicago, were you aware of that Congreso or of that union of musicians, or was that not even?
No. This is funny how it happened. When I got to Chicago in, you know, January, I talked to my cousins here. There in Chicago, and I decided, well, I want to go back to school, so I want to apply to the university. So they told me, go to the Urban Progress Center. That was located on North Avenue at that time.
Yeah.
And then later it changed to, I guess, to Trina Davila Center, and then they moved, I guess.
It's still there.
On North Avenue?
Yep. It's still there.
Okay. So it was called the Urban Progress Center, and I went there. And, you know, I spoke to someone there, and I told them, well, I want to get into the university. And they said, well, yeah, we'll help you out. And then as they were doing the paperwork, the young lady that was helping me, she asked me a lot of personal questions. And one of the questions was, what did I do in Puerto Rico? When I told her that I went to school, but most of the time I was playing music, and I played all the clubs, and I played, you know, headlining with all the big stars. And she says, as a matter of fact, I know someone that's always looking for musicians. And I go to her, well, yeah, I'd like to meet him. She goes, well, I could give him a call right now. I said, fine. So right there in the office, she made a phone call, and she was talking to Carlos Caribe Ruiz.
Yeah.
And he, you know, I got on the phone, and he says, when can you come to rehearsal? I says, when do you have rehearsal? He says, I'm having rehearsals this afternoon. I says, I'll be there.
Ready.
Yeah. So that afternoon, you know, after I did all the paperwork to get into, I enrolled at Chicago Circle Campus. So she helped me out. The girl helped me out. I enrolled in Chicago Circle Campus. And that afternoon, I made it to the Puerto Rican Congress, which was on North Avenue and near, I think the street is Claremont.
Okay.
You know, after Western Avenue.
Yeah, yep.
Right.
Which used to be, yeah, and we talked about that during our podcast with Cha-Cha Jimenez. That used to be a lot of Puerto Ricans around there. Now they're a little bit more pushed out, you know, towards the Humboldt Park.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's that afternoon I made it to the Puerto Rican Congress. That's the name of the organization. He told me, he gave me the address, and I went into his office. I met him. It was how should I say it? En español, impresionante, la oficina de Caribe.
Yeah.
He had many pictures of when he was a dancer. He was like one of these Cuban mambo dancers with the big sleeves and...
Was he Cuban or Puerto Rican?
No, he was Puerto Rican from Cabo Rojo, Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Yeah, and he had a lot of black and white pictures of different stars and autographs and places that he danced. Man, he says, well, as a matter of fact, I have a band that's rehearsing right now, and I'd like you to meet the guys, and I want you to sit in and do whatever they tell you. So he introduced me to the first band, and these were very young kids, younger than I was.
Wow.
And later
so,
on, I...
So yeah. Around their teens, like 15, 16?
Yeah, and that was... The piano player was very amazing for being so young. His name was Edwin Sanchez.
Yeah.
Edwin Sanchez, yeah.
Still around and in the Chicago scene, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I met him when he was just maybe 13, wow. I guess. Wow. Yeah, he was very young. The band sounded good, and they were all young. But Carlos Caribe Ruiz tells me, go play the timbales. But there was a timbale player there. And he tells the guys, step aside. They gave me the sticks, and then they played three numbers, three different genres, salsa, son montuno, and a bolero.
Okay.
So I played them, and then they did a descarga.
Do you still remember the name of the songs or no?
No, I don't remember the name of the songs. Yeah. I remember the descarga that I had the solo, did a solo. And then after I finished, well, Carlos Caribe brought me back into his office, and I guess they were continuing their rehearsal. And he goes, as a matter of fact, forget about that band. I got another band. Because he had like three buildings there.
Wow.
With different rehearsal space.
Wow! Yeah.
So he took me to the next building, and there was a band rehearsing there without a timbalero.
Okay.
Right. So they had some timbales set up, and when I walked in, everybody looked, wow, these guys were at my age, but nobody smiled. I said, what am I getting into here?
Yep. Uh-huh.
These guys were very serious. Yep. And then I remember the leader says, "Okay, we're gonna play." We're going to play two numbers, and then the last number is going to be a solo. So I did the repertoire. You know, I did the first number, which was the salsa. I did the second number, which was like a merengue with a Mozambique.
Okay.
They were trying to trick me, but, you know, I had mileage on myself.
Yeah. You
know, Yeah. So I guess that's what they saw, that I could, you know, I didn't hesitate. I just... you know, okay, you're giving me a merengue, and then you're gonna change the beat on me. I changed it.
Yeah.
Then the last tune was a solo again, another timbale solo. And I did the audition.
Yeah.
I did the audition, and they said, well, we'll let you know if anything happens. Just talk to Caribe, give him your number, and then we'll see what happens. We're still auditioning people. I said, okay, fine.
and the interesting part is, you know, as a musician myself, that I've been around in the scene, playing trumpet and different instruments, you could tell, you know, everybody, when you walk into a room full of musicians, the, como se dice, you know, everybody is so, they could be uptight sometimes, you know, they could kind of, mm-hmm. right. they look at you like, hey, who is this guy, you know, who's this young guy, you know, let's see mm-hmm. if he's really good. But it's mm-hmm. funny that you mentioned that it happened with the older crowd. And the younger right. guys were just probably like, hey, this guy's from Puerto Rico. We want to get to know what he mm-hmm. has, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
It yeah, that happened a lot.
yeah. The funny thing was that the first band that Carlos Caribe brought me in to see, the younger guys, he wasn't going to fire the timbalera. He was just giving him like how would you say it? He was just saying, look, you're not indispensable.
Mm.
I could hire somebody on the spot. He was trying to teach him a lesson.
Mm.
That's what I found out later on. Because the guy became a really good friend of mine. He would stay over at my house a lot of times. He became a real good friend. And we would laugh about that day.
Wow. Yeah, I bet you when he saw you coming in, he's like, man, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I'm fired or what? Yeah, later on, we were in several orchestras together, as a matter of fact. Yeah, he was a good...
Do you remember the names of those two bands that you were checking out?
Yeah, the first one was Típica 78, I guess. Típica 78, which later became Típica Leal. Which later on, Angel Melendez, the trombone mm-hmm. player,
yeah.
he came out of that band.
Okay.
And Edwin Sanchez was always, and Mike wow. Rivera, the bass player.
Wow. And Angel Melendez is still around in the Chicago scene. He plays with, I believe, Mambo 911.
Okay.
Yeah, and he has his own band as well.
Right. And then the second band, the one that, well, I didn't say, I got hired by the second band.
Oh, who was that?
La Solución.
Ah, okay. So let's talk a little bit about La Solución. Now, for my salsa listeners out there, there was like three different Soluciones at the time, right?
Actually, I remember one that came from Mayagüez, Puerto Rico, which I did a gig with Frankie Ruiz.
Yes, yes.
Frankie Ruiz was starting out, and I did a gig with him with another band, which was led by Elliot Feijó, which was a famous trumpet player here in mm-hmm. Puerto Rico. He and Sammy Barreto, Ray Barreto's brother, on trombone.
Okay.
And myself on congas, and we did a gig with La Solución, and Frankie Ruiz was there, and they were starting out in the early 70s. That was already established in Puerto Rico, La Solución. But
yeah,
this
two or three different Solución.
I think I'm not sure of the third one, but I know for sure there was two.
Yeah, La Solución, which Frankie Ruiz and those that
right.
are Salcedo, they might have heard him on, you know, the famous track La Rueda. And they, you know, La Solución in Chicago. So at the same time, I remember when I first found out you were in La Solución, I was like, oh man, you play with Frankie Ruiz, but you just kind of confirmed that as well, that you did do a show with Frankie Ruiz.
Right. When he was starting out with La Solución in Puerto Rico. As a matter of fact, the gig was in Mayagüez.
His hometown,
yeah.
Huh? The hometown.
Yeah, La Solución, right. Yeah. They were from that area.
Okay, so the second band was a little bit more older guys, and it was La Solución, and that you were with that band for a while?
Yeah, I say from 77, January, you know, starting off 77, till around 80. Somewhere around that time, yeah.
And what kind of venues were you guys playing? Like, what were you guys traveling around, or just Chicago?
Yeah, we traveled. As a matter of fact, before I joined the band, they traveled to Puerto Rico. They went to New York. They played the East Coast. I think they even went to Washington, D.C. They traveled. And then when I joined the band, we did some traveling as far north as Milwaukee and as far east as Youngstown.
Okay, okay.
Youngstown, Ohio, yeah. Yeah, we did some gigs there.
And to give all our listeners a little bit more of an idea, we're going to put in a couple throughout the week. We'll put in a couple of links to YouTube to the style of music that these guys were playing. And the reason why I want to do that is because this was not easy music, you know, and we start going in there. And by easy music, you know, musicians, we know easy music as being like arrangements that just have, you know, power chords or three basic chords, you know, and it's just like a basic arrangement. You're talking about guys that are playing professional arrangements that were done by Hector Lao, Willie Colon, guys that were playing all over Africa, the you know, different continents. So to me, that's kind of a big deal that you were in an era that these young guys were playing arrangements that to this day you need to be able to read music in order to do that. And these guys were playing it most of the time by ear, right?
Well, the brass section, they all read because they came from, I guess they took music in their high school.
Mm.
And, I remember the brass section all reading and the piano player reading and the bass player reading. But the percussion, you know, we all did it by, you know, by ear.
Yeah.
And we did our own, you know, we did our own takes on some songs. We changed some of the songs around, you know, just to change the arrangement a little bit.
Yep.
But these guys were playing, I would say, La Solución. I came from Puerto Rico listening to all the good bands in Puerto Rico and doing gigs with them. And when I heard La Solución, as I mentioned in at that audition, these guys sounded, that was a real thick, fat sound. I mean, it was like a Mack truck, you know, coming towards you. When I heard that, you know, the brass section was tight, the rhythm section was tighter, and the percussion, the conga and bongo, they were two brothers. Mm-hmm. These guys were, you know, imagine two brothers. They would rehearse all the time. These guys were tight. So I just, you know, it was, as a musician yourself, when you're with a tight band, it makes it easy on you.
Easier. And you know, the groove is there. And
right.
when we say tight, we basically mean that it just clicks together. There's no, I don't know, for our listeners, if you ever listen to a band or you know, to a young band most of the time that sounds a little off and you're like, okay, they're good, but you could tell that somebody's like playing a little bit faster than the other. When you click together, it's just a completely different feeling. And then as a musician, when you're playing there, it elevates you to a whole nother level, and it just feels.
Yes, sir. Right?
But yeah, so these young guys were playing like this type of music, and to me, it amazes me. And I feel, you know, and doing some reading, and Carlos, you could probably talk a little bit more about this, but, you know, being in an urban setting, I think also played a big role, because that was their way, their outlet, right? The way for them to get out of, you know, hanging out in the streets or doing the stuff. So they put in all that time into the music, and then that passion translated through the music. Would you say that was the deal? I mean, you were there.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the Puerto Rican Congress, it was called the Puerto Rican Congress of Mutual Aid. Caribe had a vision of making a conservatory of music and getting these kids from, you know, from low-income Puerto Rican neighborhoods, you know, interested in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Not only was there music there, there was also art and other things. They would do plays, they would dance, many other in the field of arts. So, yes, it was a way of getting all that energy that these kids had and their talent and bringing it out and then putting it together in these and bringing out their identity as Puerto Ricans.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that was different from the orchestra, especially La Solución, was that they incorporated salsa with the typical music. Some of the links you're going to find on YouTube have music inspired by la música típica de Puerto Rico.
Like the bombi plena, or are we talking
something? Yeah, okay. Plena and Seicho Real and Decimas and what they call here Christmas music. with the cuatro. Yeah.
And that's the next topic I want to talk about. And we're going to go deep into music right here. And we're also going to throw that little Chicago versus New York thing, right?
Right.
There was always, yeah, when you talk to salseros from Chicago, you know, and being that I grew up around salsa all my life, when you ask them Chicago salsa versus New York salsa, the first thing they say is Chicago salsa has Puerto Rican has that Puerto Rican native style to it, right? The say chorreao, the bomba y plena. And when you say New York, they always say it has a little bit more of that Cuban influence. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly right. As a matter of fact, you know, New York salsa was inspired by the Cubans, you know, and the song, the guajira and el mambo and rumba. But the salsa from Chicago was actually incorporated the music, the native music of Puerto Rico more. Willie Colon did it. Willie Colon did it with Hector Lavoe. He did an album called, especially the Christmas albums, Asalto Navideño, and that incorporated some style like that. But we did it with the regular, not for Christmas. We did it with regular lyrics and incorporated into the arrangements.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one of the big things is the whole, like you mentioned, you know, where Caribe was trying to bring back keep the culture alive, you know. So by having them do that, it became kind of like the style of Chicago, you know, the Chicago style of salsa.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Caribe made some recordings with La Solución with artists from Puerto Rico de la música típica with Ramito.
Okay.
And then later on with his brothers Luisito y Moralito, and a lady called La Calandria and Estina Reyes, La Calandria, and Andres Mario Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
He recorded, and later on we recorded an album with the Eberack. That's the name of the label.
It's
Caribe backwards. Eberack Records. We did we did an Eberack All Star recording with Ramito, La Calandria, and Mario Hernandez, and I recorded timbales on all the tracks.
Okay,
and I remember we did it on Oak Street at Universal Studios. I remember it well, and it was a pleasure. Wow, it was a good experience playing with these guys, and especially Ramito and the lyrics, and they would do like plenas and they would do like decimas, and they would do, you know, she would bring up a theme and he would answer her, and it was like an ad lib thing.
Yeah.
It was just it's just a wonderful experience.
And it's something that has transcended throughout the years now. You know, we have that same style of salsa now. Some of it has been lost, I will say. You know, when I see some bands, you know, they obviously in the whole salsa genre, we went from being, you know, the orchestra type, you know, that only play like in ballrooms. Then it became the urban salsa, and then the salsa romantica took over. And right now I feel like salsa is starting to get back that groove, but everybody's trying to identify with something, and they quite don't have it yet. But hopefully the next Willie Colon, Hector Lavoe come around, or the next
I hope so.
But what were some of the famous people that you played with? I know there was a bunch of festivals in Chicago during that time, and you played in a couple of them.
Yeah, we did all the venues like Chicago Fest, different activities in Grant Park, a lot of gigs at the Aragon Ballroom, you know, headlining for Willie Colon, of course, Eddie Palmieri, Gran Combo, Andy Montañez later on, everyone that would come from New York or Puerto Rico, we would be in those gigs too.
Any and, funny stories or interesting stories with some of these big stars?
there was almost a riot at the Aragon.
So what went down there?
We were doing a gig there with Willie Colon when Hector Lavoe was still there. And Hector Lavoe, unfortunately, Well, this is, everyone knows this.
Yeah,
he, I guess he, maybe he did too much of some substance.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to come out and sing. And, you know, since we were back there, we knew what was going on. So Willie Colon came out and somebody else took the microphone and started singing, and the people were getting a little bit, you know, anxious. And then when Willie Colon started singing Hector Lavoe songs, the people started yelling and yelling and yelling, and they didn't want that. And so I guess that towards the end, he did come out. He did come out and did the show. But that was a scary moment.
And I we know that, you know, by reading about his life story and going through the different articles, that, you know, drugs played a big role during this time. And I know that talking to other fellow musicians that, you know, I've had the pleasure of playing with some of these guys that played with you during that time.
Okay.
And they'll mention, you know, they'll mention that, unfortunately, during those times, you know, that's when, you know, the drug era was really big in Chicago.
Right.
So that would happen in a lot of shows, right?
That's funny because especially when I saw that movie that I guess J-Lo produced with Mark Anthony about Hector Lavoe.
Yeah.
Even though they criticized some of the parts, but a lot of it was true. Yeah, it was like that. It was like that.
Yeah, it was definitely that type of atmosphere. You know, you got a bunch of young people in one era, and it's always been around in the music era, in the music industry.
Yeah. It came from the 1900s with the jazz guys down there in Louisiana, you know?
Yep. So any other crazy stories? I know that you've played with Celia Cruz was one of them that you backed up.
Yeah, I backed up Celia Cruz. Marvin Santiago backed him up before he passed away. Ismael Miranda.
Yeah.
And just about anybody that was on the scene at that time, we would either headline, or later on after I left Solución, I was with other bands that we would be like the bands that would back up singers that would come from either New York or Puerto Rico.
Oh yeah, because I know a lot of times, you know, in order to save money, you know, they'll have a band here,
right?
So and then they'll back up like the main singer.
So for example, a singer would, his producer or his manager would send the arrangements ahead of time. Now they do it through the internet, but before they would send it.
Snail mail.
Yeah. And we would rehearse without the singer, a couple of rehearsals. Then we would have one rehearsal with the singer before the concert or the big dance that we would cover.
Yeah.
So that's how we did a lot. Yeah, that's how we did a lot.
A lot of the
shows.
And since you mentioned Marvin Santiago, you know, a lot of people don't know that Chicago was home for a lot of famous, you know, musicians, especially famous singers. So I know Marvin Santiago lived in Chicago for a little bit. Junior Gonzalez, Hector Tricoche.
Right, yeah.
You know, these guys were living in Chicago, unfortunately.
Yeah, even Tito Allen, too.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the name, you know, and I talk about this because I've seen people say, you know, they don't really know that Chicago produced such great musicians because they end up going to New York or Puerto Rico, and that's when they blow up, right? But Chicago had a very competitive, and it still does, has very good talent.
Yeah, and speaking of one of those talents, there was after I left La Solución, I joined a band called Felipe y La Gran Sonora. Felipe Gonzalez. As a matter of fact, I became good friends with Felipe, and he had recordings. He did some in the early or late 60s, I guess.
Yeah.
And very early 70s or late 60s, he had recordings with Marvin Santiago. Marvin Santiago was the singer of his band, and Chel Feliciano, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
Chel Feliciano was in Chicago?
Yeah, he wasn't. He lived in Chicago. He was,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think he was related to Vitin Santiago, which was the owner of the Latin Village, which was a place that we played there many, many times. We were studying there for about 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
That's on Lincoln Avenue.
You know,
yeah.
And the crazy part is that there's not a lot of salsa movement here in Chicago anymore, and that's why we wanted to bring out this podcast, because we want the salsa back, man.
Hey, yeah.
Listen, I'm Dominican, but I've always loved some salsa myself. I did it all my life when I was younger. And you know, hopefully maybe we'll have some young kids, not just in Chicago, but just anywhere in the U.S. right now. I want to see some of the Latinos from the States continuing to rise in salsa at those levels we used to see in the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s. And some of the
some of the
top names were actually young immigrants who had come to the U.S. or maybe first generation Latinos.
And funny thing is that the same movement that we had. So when I was growing up, it was reggaeton, right? So we had a little studio set up and we did reggaeton. So it's the same kind of thing, but back in those days it was salsa, right?
right. So, yeah.
We still dabble with the salsa. That's what I was doing this past weekend in the studio, reliving some salsa.
Oh, okay.
We were jamming out, but nothing as good as what these cats were doing back in those days.
Yeah, I'm really amazed at these kids that grew up, you know, mentioning La Típica 78 and Edwin Sanchez and La Solución and many other bands, La Unión, La Nuestra, La Confidencia, La Justicia. These guys were all, you know, Chicago youth, and yep. They really played good salsa. I mean, really, because, you know, I came from where salsa came from, not only New York, but Puerto Rico, where there was good salsa, you know, and I was really amazed at the sound these guys were incorporating, you know, with their orchestras. It's really, really good, really good.
And just the passion behind it. I mean, it's just, it you could feel it through the music. And I if you're listening, you know, and you have videos or you have recordings, please feel free to share it with us. We will be more than happy to share it with everybody that's listening, and we will promote it, because it just takes us back into how they will pour their heart and soul into this.
Yeah, I'm writing down some of these names right now that Luis is mentioning. I'm going to start going online and seeing if I could find some old pictures, old maybe YouTube videos, and maybe we'll find some old videos of you playing the timbales.
Oh yeah. So
you know, hopefully we could share some of that too.
You're going to see a lot of polyester and afros and
Yeah, like I'm looking at a picture right now of La Solución in the 70s recording in the studio. And exactly like you said earlier, the guys on the saxophones are reading music, but the percussionists are all just playing.
Right, they're just playing. Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more of Del Amor in the 1990s when this freestyle music was coming up.
Well, my cousin Peter Sanchez, mm-hmm. and my other cousin Lisette was one of the singers. Pete was one of the producers. He came by the house one day. He says, "Look, We did some recordings and we need some Latin percussion. Can you come? Can you come and record some stuff for us?" And I go, "Sure." So I go, "What do you need?" He goes, "Anything Latin you got." And so I took some timbales and some congos with me. Mm-hmm. So we went down to Soto Studios. I don't know if that's still around.
Haven't heard it, no.
Right. It was on Grand Avenue, but to the east.
Okay.
You know, towards downtown.
Yep.
Okay,
that transformed now into rehearsal studios. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. It was like one of these warehouses.
Yep, it's called Superior Street Studios now.
Okay, so actually, hey, I was one of the pioneers there.
every musician in Chicago has been to that studio.
Okay, so I go up there with Pete, and he introduces me to the engineer, and he goes, "I'm going to give you a cue, and you just start jamming." I go, "All right." He goes, "I'm gonna record you on timbales first. Just when I give you the cue, you just start jamming, whatever you feel." And you know, this is true. I guess the first take you make is the best. Because you know, he cued me, I started jamming, and that's what he took. That's what he stayed with.
Wow. And this was the freestyle music, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It was a song called Del Amor. It was Hard to Let Go or something, I guess. You can find it on YouTube.
Yep. We'll have to post that. And this was you know, and hopefully we could probably get an episode about this, about house and freestyle, but this was a big freestyle, was kind of like the music of the house music of the Latino community.
Okay.
Right? Everybody here in Chicago, New York, that was like Latino and loved house music, they would do freestyle music. And most of the people, you know, you have people like George Lamont, that, you know, came out of this genre.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's interesting how you were able to go, from playing salsa to go to freestyle. Any other genre of music that you were playing to?
Oh, sure. way back before reggae was popular, I played in a reggae band. Yeah, there was some Jamaicans, man, and there was there was a couple of guys from Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And I remember that. Actually, you know how I got into reggae music? They saw me jamming in Humboldt Park.
Mm.
They saw me jamming with the congas, you know, just doing solos with other guys, you know, just free jamming, mm-hmm. you know, bembe, what they call a bembe.
Yeah.
And then I seen these guys with dreadlocks and these guys, and then they pulled me aside and says, look, we have a band, and we would like to get, you know, that kind of flavor in some of the songs. You know, you just play the percussion. I go, yeah. I rehearsed with them and then actually played with them. And funny thing is what the Jamaican guy goes, we usually don't have anybody that's not Jamaican or from the islands or you know, in other words, nobody lighter than they were. But they since they were, I guess because he was Rastafarian.
Yeah.
He was Rastafarian, so yeah. But you know, we it was like a real good friendship that we made. And later on, I was reading online a newspaper from Chicago called The Reader, which usually came up on Lincoln Avenue, that area by mm-hmm. Wrigley Field.
Yep.
That area, The Reader. And I saw them, and they were doing gigs, big gigs. So they actually made it. Yeah. Wow. And then, I rehearsed and went and played with another band, a rock band, as a matter of fact. I played Latin percussion in a rock band called Mass Transit. I don't know what happened to them. It was called Mass Transit, and they were doing gigs on Lincoln Avenue.
Yeah.
All the clubs there.
Do you remember the name of the reggae band?
No, but I played, after that, I played with the leader of a reggae band called Armageddon Reggae Band. I don't know if they're still around. But that other reggae band, no, I forget. Yeah, it's been so long, man.
And the reggae scene is still pretty big here in Chicago, as well as the rock and the blues scene, especially around the Halsted area. They have Kingston Mines, which has been around for so many years.
Okay.
You know, and they have other bars and venues around there that still showcase a lot of Chicago musicians.
Yeah, I remember that. Before reggae was popular, I went and saw at the Park West. I don't know if that place is still around, on Armitage.
Yep, still there.
Near Lincoln Park. Yeah, I went and saw Jimmy Cliff. So yep. I just wanted to get the real vibes, you know, of the reggae. Yeah, so I went and saw him live there. And then after that, it became like a big thing with Bob Marley, and everybody was into reggae. And and back in England, everybody was playing reggae. And then the Police came out, a rock band called The Police, playing some reggae riffs, and it was popular. But I liked it when I first heard it, so I was into it before it became famous.
Yeah, and it's back at it again, you know, here in Chicago. It's a big community now.
Okay.
Yep, just like the salsa community is starting to come back up. You know, we have different nightclubs now that are promoting Salsa Sundays at Cubby Bear. You know, they'll have like different salsa days during the week where, you know, local Chicago bands will go and play.
Okay, well, yeah, we have to make it. They have to make it happen. They have to be everywhere and bring it back. Sure.
Yeah. So and, definitely, and
especially get the younger kids involved again, like we did that one time.
Yeah.
You know, in the early 70s.
That would be great, man. And hopefully, you know, by people listening to this podcast, we could link up. That's something that's been a dream of mine, is to bring back the flavor of salsa here in Chicago in an urban and a young setting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I want to say thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. You know, we wanted to showcase the history, but in order to understand where we're at now, we need to understand the past, right? So
right.
We mm-hmm. wanted to bring that up, and we're going to continue to bring different guests on that made a big influence here in Chicago or all over the United States in the Latino community. So I wanted to say, you know, on behalf of La Verdad Podcast, yes, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure, and many blessings to you, and much success and much love.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and you guys know I normally talk a lot, but early in this show, I'm the student. I just wanted to sit back and learn, because I love the music, but in terms of creating it, I don't know much about it, and so it's always really nice to hear these stories of how, you know, people get into the business, how these people who we idolize, especially if you're a fan of salsa, you know, would live some of their lives. And whenever we can highlight one of those stories, it's always a good thing.
Awesome. So once again, on behalf of Carlos and myself, Christian, this is La Verdad Podcast, and thank you for listening.
Yep, subscribe, rate, review on iTunes. You can find us on Google Play Music, SoundCloud, Stitcher. We're all over. We're trying to make it easy for you to find us. Thank you, and we'll see you again next week.
Peace.